Welcome to the Redwood Library and Athenaeum. You've just entered America's first purpose-built library and the oldest library in continuous use in the country. It is the only remaining secular, public, cultural institution in the United States with an unbroken link to the colonial period and the nation's founding. Chartered in 1747, the Redwood is celebrating its 275th anniversary, and we are glad you're here with us in this milestone year. Upon entering the library, you arrived in the Ravinsky Delivery Room. Take a look around and pause facing the open doorway to the right of the circulation desk. The next room is the Roderick Terry Reading Room, and beyond that, the Harrison Room, the original structure of the Redwood Library, and where our tour will begin. The Redwood Library is a National Historic Site and the first public neoclassical building in America. Designed by Peter Harrison, the father of American architecture, the building was inspired by the designs of Andrea Palladio, a 16th century architect of the Italian Renaissance. We will learn more about Harrison as the tour continues. You should now be standing in the Harrison Room. This room comprised the original building of the Redwood and has been in continuous use since its completion in 1750. The Company of the Redwood Library was established in 1747 by Abraham Redwood and 46 colonists with the goal of making written knowledge more widely available to the Newport community. Henry Collins, one of the original proprietors, donated his bowling green used to play the game of bowls, which can be compared to bocce, and the Redwood edifice was erected on these grounds. Peter Harrison designed the building in the Palladian style, and while the exterior of the building may look like stone, it is actually wood that has been rusticated to look like stone, showcasing one of the many ingenuities of Harrison's design. Thomas Jefferson began championing classical architecture as the model for public building in the New Republic, making the Redwood Library one of the most architecturally influential buildings in America. Following the Redwood Library, Peter Harrison would go on to design the Summer House, found on the Redwood grounds, the Touro Synagogue, the first synagogue in America, and the Brick Market, asserting Newport's ascension as a cosmopolitan colonial city, graced with wealth and classical design. In 1750, one could stand on Redwood's portico and have an uninterrupted view of the harbor. Now it stands among stately beech trees, and the city has grown around it. The library, upon its founding, was open to the public, though not free, and remains a membership library. Abraham Redwood contributed £500 sterling to acquire the original collection of 751 titles, all purchased in London. The titles include subjects such as religion, philosophy, law, architecture, classics, agriculture, and medicine. Abraham Redwood had specified that the books should be useful, so there were many highly pragmatic instructional volumes and pamphlets, including those on beekeeping and cider making. The oldest book housed in the Redwood's collection is a Bible written in Latin, dating to the year 1487/1488, and also includes copies of the Torah and Quran. Interestingly, in 1761, the two most circulated books were a history of the English Civil War from a royalist perspective and a biography of British naval officers. Ezra Stiles was a prominent early librarian at the Redwood and one of the influential founders of Brown University. He would later go on to become the president of Yale. When the library began service, the librarian kept the key and opened the building for 2 hours late every Thursday afternoon. Members, that is to say shareholders, were allowed to borrow one book per month. The vault still holds samples of those early circulation receipt books, from which the borrower's signature was torn off and destroyed when the book was returned. This standard procedure of the period unfortunately precludes identifying the borrower. During the American Revolution, Newport endured occupation by English forces from 1776 to 1779 and disrupted regular operations at the Redwood. The Harrison Room may have been used as an officers' club for the occupying army or even intermittently as a hospital. Many of the books on the shelves disappeared, some with Redwood members and Newport citizens, others with British officers. When the English forces withdrew, the city of Newport, including the Redwood, worked to restore itself to a life before the war. By 1790, the key had been lost, and the directors advertised for its return in the newspapers. The key of the library being missing, supposed to be lent by the former librarian, the person who has it is earnestly requested to deliver it. When Newport's fortunes revived in the 19th century, the Redwood Library once again assumed its leading role in the cultural life of the city. Today, the Redwood has restored about 92% of the original collection housed here. Now look on the wall to the right of the great doors. You will find a portrait of Peter Harrison attributed to Louis J. Sands. This painting is a copy after a 1756 portrait by Nathaniel Spimbert. Next to him is a portrait of his wife, Elizabeth Pelham Harrison, attributed to Joseph Blackburn, circa 1754 to 1755. In the opposite corner to the left of the great doors is a portrait of Abraham Redwood by Samuel King, circa 1785. Notably, he gave instruction to Charles Bird King, an artist you will learn more about later. Another artist, Robert Feek, was one of the earliest native colonial painters. His portraits include prominent members of families in Boston, Philadelphia, and Newport. Turn to look at the doorway that you passed under to enter this room. Find the portrait on the right of the wall, the sitter with ruffled cuffs and shirt collar, donning the traditional periwig of the era. This is Henry Collins, donator of the land on which the Redwood was built. This work was completed circa 1748, 1 year after the Redwood was conceived. Now look to the cluster of portraits above the original main doors. These works are all by Gilbert Stuart. Stuart, 1755 to 1828, lived and studied art in Newport. Widely considered one of America's foremost portraitists, he spent his adult career in Boston, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C., where he painted many familiar portraits, including the most famous images of George Washington. The first of a man in a red coat is John Bannister, circa 1774 to 1775. Bannister, a Newport merchant and graduate of Harvard College in 1764, was the son of John and Hermione Pelham Bannister, and the nephew of Peter Harrison and Elizabeth Pelham Harrison. Now look to the portrait of mother and child, Christian Bannister and son, circa 1774 to 1775. Christian Stell Bannister was the wife of John Bannister. She is shown here with her only child, John Bannister Jr. Self-portrait at 24, 1778, shows Gilbert Stuart in a large black hat. Considered the first major leap in his artistic technique, the self-portrait was painted while Stuart was under the tutelage of Benjamin West in England. Stuart gave this work to his childhood friend, Benjamin Waterhouse, in 1780. Find the portrait of a man supporting his head in his hand, propped up by his elbow. This is Dr. Benjamin Waterhouse, childhood friend of Gilbert Stuart, painted circa 1776. Benjamin Waterhouse, 1754 to 1846, was born in Newport, studied medicine in Newport and Europe, and assisted in founding Harvard Medical School. He is most known for being the first doctor in the United States to administer the smallpox vaccine. Stuart painted this portrait of his childhood friend just before Waterhouse left to study medicine in London. The collection of the Redwood spans more than just paintings. Look to the clock in the middle of the room, and you will see the Thomas Claggett Tall Case Clock, circa 1775. It features a tombstone dial with rocking ship and historically significant painted scene in the arch in a mahogany case with raised panel door, depicting Fort George, which was built in 1738 to defend Newport. It is situated on Goat Island in Newport and was renamed Fort Liberty at the outbreak of the Revolution. It was renamed Fort George by the British when they occupied Newport in 1776. This dial features an animated rocking ship sailing in front of the fort. It moves back and forth with the motion of the pendulum by means of a small connecting rod. The other clock that you see is a contemporary work. Nari Ward's Anchoring Escapement, Ithaca, inhabits the casing of an Ithaca clock, strategically altering the outmoded timepiece to prompt questions about how time lies embedded in colonial modernity's regimes of progress and labor, rationalization, and control. Although there is no record of the original appearance of this room's interior, in 1932, restoration architect Norman Isham returned the Harrison Room to the 18th century style, with the exception of the 19th century skylight. Now please exit through the doors that you came in and enter the Roderick Terry Reading Room. Since its inception, the Redwood has been continuously evolving and expanding its role as an educational institution. The Redwood's institutional approach, as evident in the range of its programs and offerings, capitalizes on its unique position as a hybrid institution able to stimulate intellectual pursuit across multiple periods and diverse subjects. This approach originates in the Redwood's historic multidimensional charge as the site where to gain both theoretical and practical knowledge, itself a recognition that the world, then as now, is best viewed from multiple perspectives. It was in order to reflect this expansiveness that the term Athenaeum was added to the library in 1833, formalizing the institution's embrace of the historic and the contemporary, the theoretical and the practical, as well as the literary and the visual. In 1858, the original building was surrounded on three sides by a U-shaped addition built by architect George Snell, reflecting the prosperity of both the Redwood and Newport itself as the city became a resort town in the 19th century. To finance this addition, the directors issued 400 new shares in the company, raising $10,000. The reading room forms the base of the U, with two long, narrow gallery rooms alongside the Harrison Room, connecting the two rooms together. The Northern Gallery Room was long known as the King Room, named for Dr. David King, former president of the Board of Directors, but it has since been renamed the Pell Chafee Room. The Southern Gallery is the Young Adults Room. In completing the addition, George Snell removed the three Palladian windows from the original east wall of the library, the current doorway into the Harrison Room, and incorporated them into the south wall of the Reading Room. Three exact copies were installed on the north wall to balance them. This expansion allowed the Redwood to increase the number of books purchased, and the new librarian kept the building open all day, including evenings. A large portion of the circulating library, as well as current periodicals, continue to be housed here, in addition to a variety of paintings and sculptures. Look to the large sculpture in between the two bookcases on the side of the room. Pheidippides, Soldier of Marathon, is a French antique bronze reproduction by Barbet Dien. It is a copy of the original marble sculpture by Jean-Pierre Cortot in 1787, located in the Louvre. In 1930, architect Norman Isham was engaged to restore the reading room under the direction of Reverend Roderick Terry, president of the Redwood from 1916 until his death in 1933. Reverend Terry was a longtime benefactor of the library, and in token of their gratitude, the directors named the renovated room in honor of him. From its origination to today, it has been a place for quiet reading and browsing of periodicals. You've probably spotted more than a few marble sculptural busts spread throughout the library. Make your way back towards the Ravinsky Room and look for the marble sculpture in the window by the circulation desk of Robinson Crusoe by William Green Turner, circa 1885 to 1890. The sculpture depicts the moment Robinson Crusoe hears the guns of the Spanish ship in distress and runs out to light his beacon fire. Above the circulation desk, you'll also notice a marble bust portrait of Benjamin Franklin. This copy by an unknown artist is made after Jean-Jacques Caffieri's 1777 clay version that would have been exhibited at the Paris Salon in that same year. The Ravinsky Delivery Room, designed by architect George Champlin Mason in 1875, houses a large part of the art collection, hung in the 19th century manner, with multiple rows above the shelves. Taking its name from traditional library nomenclature, the Ravinsky Delivery Room is where books requested by patrons are delivered to them. The original funding for the Ravinsky Room and the Redwood Street Vestibule Edition was spearheaded by George W. Gibbs. The rooms of the library were redecorated in 1915 by architects Norman Isham and John Dufay. At this time, the Ravinsky Room was named in memory of Henry Gerdon Marquand, president of the Redwood from 1895 to 1902. In 2005, the Delivery Room was renamed in honor of John E. Ravinsky, 1880 to 1970, a New York financier, Newport summer resident, and generous supporter. In 2020, the Ravinsky Room underwent a full restoration, approved by the Historical Preservation and Heritage Commission, complete with fully refinished floorings and a return to a more functional space for a modern-day library and Athenaeum. Gone are the shelved walls implanted in 1914 by the architect Norman Isham that projected into the main space from near each corner, in which partitioned the room, one specifically designed by Champlin Mason, as an open-spaced art gallery, the first in Rhode Island. Our own changes might be said to be a return to the future, for the past configuration of offending bookshelves and no seating has now given way to an open gallery, delimited by encased vitrines on the perimeter that facilitates the viewing of the paintings and which features two seating areas where one can read and contemplate, shielded by strategically positioned bookshelves. In that sense, they surpass what some might lament in the removal of the 1914 bookshelves, even if they were very rarely used, that is, the two nooks in the room's west quadrants. The shelves duplicate the molding of those removed and make use of salvaged fluting to provide regular patrons a sense of familiarity and permanence. But more important is that they are entirely mobile, as their construction features a system of hidden casters that enables their movement or removal to accommodate special events, whether a concert, wedding, or lecture. Indeed, besides historical accuracy, the specific aim of the restoration was to yield complete flexibility. Everything, including the front desk itself on hidden casters, can be tucked out of sight in a few hours' time. Take a moment to admire the paintings on the walls surrounding you and find the portrait of George Washington on the wall to the left. This painting is possibly by Jane Stewart, daughter of artist Gilbert Stewart, circa 1850 to 1860. Gift of Reverend Roderick Terry, 1928, Washington, 1732 to 1799, was the commander-in-chief of the Continental Army during the Revolutionary War and one of the founding fathers of the United States. He became the country's first president and, with the help of Henry Lighthorse Harry Lee, also pictured in this room, peacefully ended the Whiskey Rebellion. While it is not known for sure, it can be presumed that Washington would have visited the Redwood during his visit to Newport in 1790 with Thomas Jefferson. Look to the wall behind you for a self-portrait at age 30 by Charles Bird King, circa 1815. Posed as if writing, he's clothed in a dark jacket. The Redwood maintains a multitude of works by the artist. A bequest of the artist in 1862. Charles Bird King, 1785 to 1862, was born in Newport and made his living in Washington, D.C., as a painter of political figures and other celebrities of the day. Over the years, King contributed generously to the Redwood, giving money, books, and scores of paintings. Upon his death, he gave the Redwood his own personal library, volumes of bound engravings, a significant sum of money, and 75 additional paintings. His generous donations of artworks set in motion the need for a new wing, specifically conceived as an art gallery. Today, the Redwood has two galleries, the Van Alen Gallery and the Pierce Prince Gallery, to present a series of rotating exhibitions throughout the year. The Redwood has functioned for nearly 300 years as Newport's intellectual core, a humanities center, and civic learning hub styled after ideals of ancient Athenian culture and philosophy. In its early days, the library was open on Thursday afternoons for only 2 hours. Today, the original Redwood building is the oldest library building in the country, and the collection has grown to 200,000 holdings. But the present-day mission continues as it was in its charter. The library continues to serve its members and the general public, providing traditional library services as well as special programs, exhibitions, and events. The Redwood aims not only to provide accessible humanities programming for the widest possible audience, but also to specifically address researchers, students, culture tourists, the underserved, in addition to local patrons seeking communal cultural experiences alongside the solitary digestion of books. The library is privately funded, primarily supported by membership dues, shareholders, and the generosity of patrons who use it. With an acknowledgement of its founding on the profits of the slave economy of the 18th century sugar trade, it is explicitly committed to the public humanities, defined here as the use of history and culture to address diverse communities so as to create a more enlightened and equitable world. History thus embeds the Redwood's existence and activities in civic education and public service, guided by the values of integrity, empathy, community, and innovation, as well as by the belief in the power of the liberal arts to address our shared humanity. Housing an outstanding collection of 18th and 19th century paintings, sculpture, and furniture, the Redwood Library embodies the principles of a true Athenaeum, a seat of learning and arts, fulfilling its charter mission as it has for the past three centuries of having nothing in view but the good of mankind. As you exit the library, we invite you to stroll the Redwood grounds and visit the Allée, designed by architect John Russell Pope. leading to the Redwood Summer House. The small pavilion was built in 1766 by Peter Harrison for Abraham Redwood's country seat in Portsmouth, Rhode Island. Rusticated like the original library, it was presented to the Redwood in 1917. A copy of the Houdon bronze statue of George Washington, a 1932 gift of Roderick Terry, has been a local landmark for several generations. And take care to note the historic beech tree, planted in 1835 on the front grounds. Feel free to stay and savor the historic Redwood, and we hope you'll return often to attend a lecture, concert, or for just a quiet read. Thank you for visiting.